This is our Draft Prospect Analysis Show. I'm your host, Chris James, Director of Football Operations over here at Football Game Plan. Great show lined up for you this week, folks. I'm going to continue doing the prospect rankings. First and foremost, I want to apologize for being off last week. You know, this is an interesting season with everything going on with football, but it's very basketball intensive currently. I even know that tonight the likelihood is that people are prepping for these quality games that are up on the NCAA tournament docket instead of, you know, reaching out for football. But same point in time, we need to supply you with information that will help you support your team the proper way and hopefully give you an outlook on what's going to happen in the upcoming 2015 NFL draft. So I'm going to continue this week. I'm going to finish off the offensive line. Didn't get a chance to get to the center position last week, or 2 weeks ago, I should say. I'm going to do that. And then starting next week, I'm going to do a defensive split where I do the people who pursue 1 week. So I'm going to do defensive ends, defensive tackles, and outside linebackers that are more rush ends, the 3-4 concept guys. And then I'm going to do people who pay attention to or retreat, inside linebackers, 4-3 outside linebackers, corners, and safeties. So that's the outlook I'm going to take for the next 2 weeks. I'm going to do longer shows so we can get those knocked out and start to prep you for this impending draft that's going to be starting on April 30th, I believe, Thursday, April 30th, in Chicago, Illinois. So I'm going to do that. And what I'm also going to do is I'm going to take a look at some draft beliefs and faux pas. Some things I disagree with, some I agree with. This was sparked by a conversation had on social media with a group of guys that guys and young ladies that I respect their opinion. It's one of the sports groups that I'm a part of. And there's just a lot of group speak as far as how the draft is engineered. And I think it comes from people being fed the same thing over and over again. And I'm going to kind of tell you why some of these things are accurate and some are less accurate. And just give my opinion on it. No, it doesn't mean that I'm right as much as it just means I want to give you a different outlook. The Occam's razor is something that people use when referencing. The simplest answer is usually the correct one. But when it comes to things like the NFL draft or situations like this, people don't use that. They actually search for zebras where they'll see what's in front of them. And instead of using conventional wisdom, they'll go somewhere else. They'll figure out a way to deviate from the simplest answer is the correct one. So that's the type of thing I'm going to get into tonight after I talk about the center prospects that I'm ranking in today's show. So without further ado, we're going to do those center prospects, folks. And remember, if you ever want to participate in the show, that number is 323-657-1489. That's 323-657-1489. And for the center prospects, I'm going to remind you, these are my rankings based on people that I've seen play. If I have not seen, you know, a few clips of the guy to where I feel comfortable, a game or two or three, to where I feel comfortable enough to give an assessment, I can't truly rank the guy. Guys that I'm unfamiliar with, it's a disservice to you for me to try to give an assessment of said person. It'll end up being, oh, well, he's swell or he's solid or whatnot. And that really doesn't give you anything to go along with. So that's the guys who I rank are guys that I've visually seen their game. Other guys from small schools, I'll just give you some names to look out for so you can do some research if you'd like. If you hear your teams talking about the guy or if your team drafts this one of these smaller school guys in the sixth or seventh round, you would have heard of them, so you can at least familiarize yourself with. So I'll give a few of those guys from smaller schools. When I talk about these guys, some of the guys, I'm not going to really give a comparable for the centers. Reason being is visually, unless someone strikes me as a certain player that they immediately remind me of, I can't just give a comparison. I'm not going to force one if I don't feel one. But I can give strength or a strength. I can give weaknesses or a weakness that I see. And I can give a fit where I think they'll probably be more successful. What style of team offense that they're going to fit into. I'm also going to give an associated round grade for said person as far as where I think I would select them if the draft were available to me and I was a GM. And I will also be using my own situation. It's not rankings based off of anyone else. This is mine. This is, you know, if there's a guy who should be ranked there and I don't have him ranked there, it's probably because I'm not as familiar with him as maybe I should be. And feel free to definitely let me know your opinion on some of those guys. If I don't have exposure to them, I can't really do anything to rank them. All right, so without further ado, my first center prospect, the number one center in the country, is Cameron Irving out of Florida State. Irving made the switch from offensive tackle to center with a few games, I think five games left in the regular season. He was one of my top 15 for 2015 preseason top 15 players. He's a guy who I had highly ranked as a tackle prospect even last year. And he's blossomed at the center position. I gave him a first-round grade because of the talent that he has, and that's one of the strengths, is versatility, the ability to swing out to tackle if necessary, but showing his mettle as a center. He also excels in pass pro, and that's probably a result of that tackle ability that he has. He's able to handle very well in pass protection. Now, where he does lack the functional portions of the game is that he's still developing familiarity with the position of center. He's actually done a great job considering, but as more stunts, blitzes, and things like that come, he might have issues with exchanging in the NFL, not leaving the gate open, things like that. So I think that he can be successful on the next level, and I think that he has way more positives in his game than negatives. And to me, he's better fit for a vertical passing style offense, one that might be run by the New Orleans Saints. I actually have him mocked going to the Saints in my last mock because of what he can offer from that position, being able to protect and pass protection, exchange very well. And, you know, he still has a tackle mindset more than a mindset of a guard who might want to be more active pursuing downhill in the run game. So my number two center is Andy Gaelic out of Boston College. He's got a first-round grade on him as well. This senior is 6'2", about 299 pounds. You know, he's very strong at the point of attack, in my opinion. He also has great hand placement. He's probably one of the best technical centers in this draft. He might just be, in fact. My issue with him is his lateral quickness. I don't think he has as much of it as some of the other prospects. With that being said, I think that he'd probably work well in the West Coast scheme where the center has to do a lot of thinking, line calls, things like that. But he won't have to, you know, do a lot of getting to the second level on run blocks. It will be something in his game, but it won't be the crux of his game. My number three center prospect is Horanis Grasu out of Oregon. This young man was also one of my 15 players to watch, one of only two offensive linemen in that top 15, 4-15 that we did preseason. He's a senior, 6'3", 297 pounds. I give him a second-round grade. He didn't have the season that I expected when healthy. What he does do as a strength, he operates well in space. You know, with Oregon's offense, a lot of pull, stretches, things like that, he actually operates well in space, covering up a lot of the holes that are created because of that offense and the widening of it. He also responds well to the blitz, considering the fact that there's a lot of gaps left. He responds pretty well to the blitz. Now, he lacks functional strength at the point of attack, so when a guy does get into his chest, he does not tend to hold up too well with it. He has to work on that. And because of that, I think that he works better in a zone blocking scheme where he's able to locate and make things happen more than if a guy was more one-on-one with him, he'd have to do a lot of work at the point of attack. But I think that he can be a successful center on the next level. I think he can be a starter for a team in the NFL. My number four center is B.J. Finney out of Kansas State. Also a senior, 6'4", 324. Gave him a second-round grade. Now, one thing about Finney is he is extremely aggressive at the point of attack. He almost plays as if he's a guard with a nasty streak. His weakness is that, to me, he's more of a mauler than a technician, and that is an issue, especially at the center position, something to be worked on. But he does have the ability to play the center position very well, in my opinion. I think that he'd probably be more responsive in a run-heavy system, like a system that Jeff Fisher runs in St. Louis, where you know, you're going to get the requisite 30 carries by the running backs. I think that B.J. Finney would excel in that sort of system. My number five center is Reese Dismukes. No matter what, I struggle saying that last name, but Reese Dismukes out of Auburn, 6'3", 295 pounds, gave him a third-round grade. The thing about Dismukes, his positives, his strengths, he is athletic. He definitely can move. He has movement skills, quality movement skills. And I think that he could actually move to guard and likely will on the next level, but he's played center, so I'm going to grade him as a center. His weakness is the lower body strength that he doesn't have comparable to some of the other prospects. That's something that possibly can be developed, but at this point in time, it is an issue. I think that he'll be more successful in a zone blocking scheme just because of the familiarity with those particular schemes being used at Auburn. Greg Manx out of Toledo is my number six center. Also a senior, 6'5", 307 pounds. I gave him a third-round grade as well. Now, to me, his strength, he seems like he's technically sound with how he responds to people as they come to him. But he doesn't seem like he's overly athletic. When he's trying to reach to block someone, doesn't seem to get there as often. This is why, even though he's more technically sound than some of the guys in front of him, he's ranked behind because I think that that might be an issue depending on the scheme that he goes to. I think that he's more of a West Coast scheme guy. I think he could be very successful in that particular set. Trevor Salas out of Buffalo is my number seven guy. And I like a lot of these Buffalo prospects. They're not really getting the pub, whether it's this year, last year, the year prior. I think the Buffalo has guys that are successful on the next level compared to where you would expect them to be. Remember, Brandon Oliver, running back who went undrafted, did pretty well for the San Diego Chargers last year. Those Buffalo guys do some good stuff. Now back to Salas. He's also technically sound, in my opinion. I think that he is one of those guys that thinks through the game. He functions well against stunts and blitzes. The thing that bothers me is that when asked to get to the second level, it seems like he struggled to do that. Wasn't really the strong suit of his game. Someone who did remind me of was Peter Kontz out of Wisconsin, who was drafted by the Falcons. So I think that he'd be more of a West Coast guy, West Coast scheme guy, and he could be very successful for a team and even be a starter for an organization. Shane McDermott's my number eight center prospect out of Miami. The senior, 6'4", 302 pounds. Gave a fourth-round grade. Now, the big thing about him is one of the things that I noticed in a very aggressive ACC. He responded well and understood blitzes and stunts. Those schemes, when people came to him, it seemed like he didn't let them get past him. Watched quite a few games where he was not a guy to be messed with in that capacity. Where he did struggle is, again, with athleticism. I think that he is one of the guys that's not his strong suit, so he makes up with it with understanding where he's supposed to be and the skill set that he possesses. Also seemingly that he would be more successful in a West Coast scheme due to this hindrance in his game. My number nine guy is Shaq Mason out of Georgia Tech, 6'2", 310-pound senior. Gave him a fifth-round grade. There's a lot of things to like about this guy. You know, the ability to pull, considering the fact that he came from Georgia Tech, that triple-option system. He could play guard quite easily. I think he'd be really successful because the skill set that he has does actually speak to guard, and he can obviously get to the second level. Now, where he struggles is pass protection. And I think that as a whole, guys who come out of that system, especially in the interior, do struggle with pass protection because they work so much on the pulls and also getting into fits and doing things like that more than they do in pass protections and sets and things like that. So that's something that he's going to have to work on. I think that he'd probably be more successful in a run heavy, but likely a zone blocking scheme because he's able to locate and find. I think he also would be more successful at the guard position on the next level. But with his talent base, I think that he could play center in the NFL. Dylan Day is my next center prospect. He's number 10 on the board out of Mississippi State, 6'4", 305 pounds. Fifth round grade to him as well. Now, Dylan Day has great punch at the point of attack and a nasty streak. He's gotten a lot of personal fouls in his career. His weakness is that he seems to be technically flawed. And what I mean by that is he's more of a road grader. He's more of a physical force than he is a guy who sets well, uses movement skills with his feet, places his hands properly. He doesn't do that. It's a little sloppy. It's more effort. And kudos to him for being an effort guy. But at the same point in time, you have to have some technical skill behind it. I think he'd succeed in a run-heavy scheme more than anything else. I think that he's limited because of that lack of technical skill. Jake Smith out of Louisville is my number 11 center prospect. 6'3", 312 pounds. Gave him a sixth-round grade. Now, to me, his strength is that he has good punch at the point of attack. I think that he's very functionally strong with his hands. What is an issue and very odd to me is when a guy tries to bull rush him, he does fine. But when a guy does a secondary move or some sort of spin off, he loses contact and a guy is able to get past him. Something that needs to be worked on, he's got to definitely develop a little better footwork to get back in front of a guy instead of being helped out by the guard that is on said side. I think that he would respond better in a run-heavy system than in a system where you're going to be in lots of pass protection. Wouldn't be a successful center, in my opinion, in a system like running New England or Denver currently. Well, we'll see what happens at Denver. My number 12 center is David Andrews. Out of Georgia, Andrews is a guy who did very well reaching, getting to the second level, also shows strength at the point of attack. Now, the issue with Andrews is that he did have some issues with his pass protection skill set. I think that he really needs to improve and increase that. Due to this, I think that a zone blocking scheme is something that will be more beneficial to him because of the skill set that he possesses. And my last center prospect that I'm going to rank is Alex Mateus out of UConn, Connecticut. He's the number 13 prospect, 6'3", 308 pounds. He's a senior. I gave him a seventh-round grade. He does have quality movement skills and the ability to pull. When watching him, he kind of reminded me of a muscling guard, kind of like a Roberto Garza or someone like that. But he doesn't have as strong of a base as I would like. Seems to get kind of washed down when guys do power moves on him. That's not really what you're looking for. So I think that he can improve that strength and increase his ability because he's got some good technical skill to him. But he's definitely not at the level yet that would scream to me starter on the next level until he increases some of that stuff. So those are my 13 prospects that I ranked. Cameron Irving, Andy Gaelic, Hieronymus Grasso, BJ Finney, Reese Dismukes, Greg Minx, Trevor Salas, Shane McDermott, Shaq Mason, Dylan Day, Jake Smith, David Andrews, Alex Mateus. Here are some guys, as I stated, that I'm gonna give you that are, you know, smaller school guys, guys that you might not have heard of, but to keep an eye on. Matthew Reese out of Tuskegee. He's a 6'3", 310-pound senior. David Fredrickson out of Wagner. 6'2", 295-pound senior center. Derek Schatz out of Westchester, 6'3", 290 pounds, also a senior. And then a guy who I think is going to end up getting looks and may even get drafted. But because of the sloppy technique that I've seen him show, and I've seen a lot of games of this guy, I could not feel comfortable drafting him, and that's Elliott Porter out of LSU. Unfortunately, Porter has talent to boot, which is going to probably drive him to being drafted, but he just does not have the skill set that speaks to being a starting center in the NFL for me. And it seems to be based on not giving the effort that I would like to see out of him. So hopefully he can do some work, fix some of those issues, but I've seen quite a few games from LSU and seen quite a few games with Elliott Porter, and I walked away a little upset with what I saw. All right, folks, so we're going to move on. Like I said, we're going to talk about the NFL draft a little bit. Some of the faux pas, things like that, that I take issue with. And I'll definitely go more in depth later on in a project that I'm going to do sometime soon. I'm not going to release it yet, but there will be a project I'll be doing. One of the things is first rounders, fourth rounders, and seventh rounders being tagged as the following: instant starter for first rounder, a possible starter as a fourth rounder, and then a developmental or special team player as a seventh rounder. At some point in time, this might have been true. It might have. My issue with it is that it is ridiculous to believe that in this day and age. One of the things that was missed out on and happens from guys coming from high school to college and now from college to the NFL is in the 70s, you didn't have as much exposure. Yes, these scouts went out, but they didn't send scouts to Chardon State or Westchester or Hillsboro. They sent them to Alabama. They sent them to Michigan. So you had those guys being the ones that were looked upon. And you saw some guys that had immense talent, some guys who had less talent, some guys who had minimal talent. But you were drafting a lot of those guys. Now there's guys who might have been missed coming from high school to college, playing at these smaller schools, that have the talent. And they might go later in the draft because they might be slower in the 40, but they're better functional football players. And one of the things that really bothers me is people think that everyone in the NFL runs a 4-2. I will give you an update. As it stands right now today, I am faster than some of the receivers who are starters in the NFL. And it has nothing to do with my ability to start as a receiver in the NFL, because they are better functional football players than me, which is why they're in the NFL in most cases. I'm not going to call some dudes out. But anyway, those physical abilities that may be tied to first rounders, because that's just how some people think, don't speak to a great football player. Reason that first rounders get more chances than seventh rounders is for two reasons. One is, there's three, but we've talked about the talent issue, which I don't think the disparity is too huge. The number two reason is the financial burden that is stricken on a team. When you have more invested in something, you're willing to give it more chances. If Blaine Gabbert was a seventh-round pick throwing, completing 49% of his passes and looking terrible, Blaine Gabbert would have been off the team in three games. If Blake Bortles was the third pick in the seventh round, he would have been off the team after having 19 turnovers and like 12 starts. Just awful. So you give more opportunity to those with more investment. And here's the other thing that really ties into it more than anything. You ready? When you're successful at something, which most head coaches in the NFL, position coaches, and GMs have been successful, that's likely why they're where they are, you tend to think that you are the smartest person in the room. So when you make a mistake, like drafting a person in the first round who can't play a lick of football, you don't want to look bad, so you're going to give them so many opportunities that it's absurd, in an effort to not make yourself look bad. And that happens. And that's just human nature to those who are generally successful. They don't want to admit their failures. Doesn't mean everyone. It just means the majority. So that's why you keep hearing these things tied as you have to be an instant starter, possible starter as a fourth rounder, instant starter as a first rounder, possible starter as a fourth rounder, and a special team as a seventh rounder. It does not have to do with their talent or ability to play football as much as it has to do with the financial burden on a team. And people not wanting to admit that they were wrong, which plays into first-round busts. Why do first-round busts happen? First-round busts do not happen because generally do not happen due to things not being there, meaning you see signs of why a guy's going to bust generally. Sometimes there's issues that happen as to kind of tell you, that was weird that they were a bust. I mean, they didn't have any off the field issues. They were productive in college, whatnot. But generally, they weren't productive in college, but they had a great combine. Or they had severe issues off the field that no one took care of. So that's why first-round busts happen. And it ties into my whole theory of production versus potential, which is another thing. Production, in my opinion, works out much better than potential. I'm going to give you an example of the guys that I thought were potential versus production, and we'll see how they did. We're going to look at two teams' drafts really quickly. We're going to look at the draft of the Jacksonville Jaguars. So we're going to look at guys who I thought were productive that the Jaguars took. I'm actually just going to go in order. So I said Jacksonville taking Blake Bortles was a mistake in number three overall because he's more potential than production. Blake Bortles led all rookies in turnovers and looked lost in most games. Second round pick was Marquise Lee. He was production. Guess what? Marquise Lee balled out when he was healthy. Allen Robinson was potential more than production, but I thought that he had enough production to warrant a second round pick. He played okay football. Brandon Linder out of Miami. To me, he was a pretty productive lineman. He did a decent job as a rookie. Aaron Colvin, yet to be seen, simply because he's coming back from the ACL injury. Telvin Smith, production. The measurables say that he couldn't play football, but production said he could. He was balling as a rookie. Chris Smith, little mix. He didn't have a great rookie campaign. Luke Bianco had a pretty good campaign. And then Storm Johnson. Storm Johnson was more production than potential. Storm Johnson didn't do that well as a rookie, but he, in my opinion, didn't get the chance like some others, namely Toby Gerhardt, did, even though he couldn't find a hole to save his life. So more the guys who were successful for Jacksonville were the guys who were productive in college. The guys who were potential-based seemed to kind of struggle because the NFL is about being prepared, just about anything that's a professional setting. So this whole thing of potential versus production, the reason that potential works out is because there's production there already. Jason Pierre-Paul was potential more than production. He worked out with the Giants early on because he had Michael Strahan there. So that potential, getting around the edge, worked well. But when Jason Pierre-Paul was called upon to be the guy, he couldn't do it consistently. Are there really can't-miss guys? I don't think there's many can't-miss guys. To be a can't-miss guy, to me, you have to be transcendent of the position for that era. I will give Andrew Luck he was can't-miss. Doesn't mean he was going to be the best. It just means it was going to be hard for him to miss. Adrian Peterson, guy like that. Other guys that every year there's a can't-miss guy don't listen to the scouts. That is ridiculous that there's a can't-miss every year, okay, or multiple can't-misses. Picks are more important to me than particular players. Unless you're someone transcendent, I'd rather have three of you just in case someone fractures a leg, another person has a mental flame out, and then I have that production in the third one, then having one guy who has the opportunity to break a leg in a game, have a mental flame out, or not be as productive as I thought. So I like picks more than I like a certain player, unless they're special. So in closing, if I'm Jacksonville this year and I have the third pick, I wouldn't take Dante Fowler Jr. unless I had to pick someone, but you always have the opportunity to trade down and get more picks and make that team glorious. So for the Football Game Plan Radio Network, this is Chris James signing off. Folks, enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the games tonight, and I'll be back with more football for you next week. Goodbye.